Today is a very important day at both General Motors Corporation and the United Auto Workers. A ceremonial handshake will launch contract bargaining sessions, which are described by some as the most important in years. Much of the bargaining is expected to be over GM's two-tier salary system. That government-approved reform, which established a lower starting wage for incoming hires, helped GM recover from bankruptcy a few years ago after the Great Recession. And General Motors has recovered. It's in the middle of its most financially healthy period in over 10 years. To learn more about the bargaining and some related issues, current state's Mark Bayshore spoke on Friday to economist Sean McElinden of Ann Arbor's Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor. Mark first asked if negotiations will be as tough as expected, and if so, why?
Well, it's not about concessions this time around. It's about how to basically negotiate success. You know, the companies have returned to profitability for a number of years in a row, especially, and that includes General Motors. And, you know, we're still operating under a previous agreement and an agreement before that that was negotiated in a time of crisis. So the question is, to remain competitive, how much are the companies willing to share that success?
GM and Ford, for that matter, say they need to cut total labor costs. But as you've pointed out, their profits have rebounded to a very healthy level. They've had the two-tier framework for several years now. How exactly do they justify the need to cut total labor costs?
Well, they're going to be facing a lot of new competition from new plants in Mexico, and that's been in the news regarding Ford plant here in Michigan in recent days, and also other Ford investments. And GM's doubling their capacity, too, in Mexico to face an industry down south of the border that's doubling in size. But on the other hand, when you look at the share of UAW labor cost and the overall cost of the vehicle in North America for General Motors, it's down to about 5 to 6%. And it's not the major factor or share that it used to be back in the 1990s or 80s. We're spending less, just under $5 billion a year on the UAW GM department, GM is, and once it was well over $20 billion. So labor cost is only one set of costs that need to be improved, maybe not the most important.
You allude to these announcements by Ford and GM, for that matter. A few days ago, GM announced it'll invest $350 million in a Mexican factory to build the Chevrolet Cruze. All of them for North America are currently built in Lordstown, Ohio. More recently, Ford announced more production in Mexico. What is that? What are those announcements doing to the atmosphere as these talks begin?
Well, frankly, they're really upping the level of competitive strain. Before, the union was constantly whipsawed against the transplants in the South, or in the Middle South, the Japanese and German factories. But when this time, we're talking about labor costs that are one-fifth or one-eighth of the U.S. level, not just 20% lower. So it's really going to strain the talks. Many other international firms are opening new factories in Mexico, and obviously a lot of that product's coming here with very low labor costs.
Sean McElinden is the chief economist at the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor. We're talking about the beginning of contract negotiations between the United Auto Workers and General Motors, to be followed by Ford and Fiat Chrysler as well. Regarding this two-tier wage framework that we see at GM, what exactly would hourly UAW workers at GM like to see? Would they like to see lower tier workers just given raises, or what do you think they may be asking for specifically?
Well, first of all, the first tier workers would like a base rate wage change. They haven't had one since 2005, although they still have one of the higher wage rates at any automaker in the United States. Only Mercedes is higher. But the second, they really would like to bridge the gap for the second-tier workers in regards to what they're paid for doing the same work as first-tier workers. And we think there's some sort of formula is going to be worked out where that second-tier wage might have a fairly rapid grow-in over 4 to 6 or 7 years to catch up with the first tier. And, you know, these workers are doing heavy manufacturing right next to workers that make almost twice, actually twice what they do. And that's not good for either the union or the company. And maybe not even necessarily required anymore to compete against at least other workers in the United States.
Mm. Is the two-tier arrangement creating tension on the floor?
It is at Chrysler. I think and that's the company that's most likely to experience maybe a labor interruption. At GM, about 19-20% of the labor force is second tier compared to 46% at Chrysler, almost half the labor force. So at Chrysler, you've got to give these people something second tier a lot, or you're not going to get a contract ratified. That may not be the case at General Motors, who hasn't taken advantage of the second tier labor hiring as much as Chrysler has. But on the other hand, some plants are different than others. You know, Lake Orion plant north of Detroit, Lake Orion Assembly is well over 60% second and even a third tier.
At a briefing last month in Detroit, Sean, you observed, and I will quote, GM should hire some workers for pity's sake, unquote. Not a lot of nuance there. Why should they bump hiring?
Well, it is an uncomfortable situation to see for the first time since 1925 Ford hourly and total employment hire in the United States and General Motors. When's the last time that happened? Well, when my grandfather was young. I'll tell you, they've really been very, very careful about this. And there's a capacity that should be added in certain areas. Maybe some components that aren't going to Mexico and can't go, that you suppliers are making too much money on, that maybe you should bring back in. I really do think it's a good trade-off for the union. If they ask for too much on wages, they won't see that employment growth. If they ask for the right to a compromise, we could see some significant employment change, I hope.
We've already spent some time talking about Mexico during this conversation, but I want to go back to another comment you made last month, also in Detroit, I believe. You maintained that Mexico calls the tune for everyone in North American automotive labor. Can you tell us more about what you meant by that?
Ford told us last week, and GM told us several months ago, and so did Honda, Mazda, Audi, Mercedes, Toyota, Nissan are all expanding or starting very large assembly plants in Mexico. And essentially, soon they'll be doubling the size of their vehicle production, almost to the size of Germany, and essentially producing one out of every three vehicles in North America. Assembly workers, automaker workers in Mexico earn about $5.35 an hour for a wage rate compared to our $19 or $28 an hour up here. And obviously, benefits aren't adding much to that score down there. The peso has been devalued consistently by 40% in the last 10 years. And wages are actually falling in Mexico, not rising with all this new employment. So you tell me, who's calling the tune? It's certainly not a Toyota plant in Kentucky. It's a brand new plant maybe near Monterrey or south of Mexico City. 600,000 people working in their auto industry now, and considerably less than our people are.
Do you expect these discussions in Detroit to get contentious?
At Chrysler. In fact, so much so that I don't even really see Chrysler as part of the pattern. If the union tries too hard to keep Chrysler in the pattern, it will probably cost UAWGM and Ford workers some money. And, you know, Chrysler has gotten special deals in the past outside of the agreement, much to the, unhappiness of the Ford and GM negotiators. But their situation is very different at Chrysler. And so why Sergio is not only, he's not talking about Mexico, he's talking about selling the company,
right,
or merging it. So how that will influence the GM talks is anyone's guess. If I were the union, I'd get Ford and GM out of the way first and then focus on Chrysler.
I want to ask you about the anticipation here in Lansing, which is focused on the production of the Camaro 6 to begin here soon. It's creating a lot of excitement locally. There are more workers going to work. What are your thoughts on this development?
Well, there's a new platform coming for a lot of cars at Grand River called Alpha 2. And frankly, we're also going to get a new CT6, apparently, CT5, CTS. I mean, really what the excitement around Camaro should be that this shows a commitment by General Motors to the Grand River plant. That if Cadillac sales aren't what they should be or what we had hoped to be, they're going to keep that labor force busy, you know, excellent crew, by adding extra models to the lineup, you know, so that the plant runs at full capacity, hopefully, which is its most efficient level. And that should be the real excitement, is that adding Camaro to the plant will make production of Cadillacs that much more efficient.
Sean McElinden is the chief economist at the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor. We've been talking about this summer's UAW contract negotiations with GM, Ford, and Fiat Chrysler. Sean, thank you for joining us.
All right.
For Current State, I'm Mark Bayshore.